Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 370. Full house, full table, full set of chairs. I don't know. We can have a full dinner party. Look at this.
So you're saying we don't have room for anyone else?
We do not. I mean, no, we do. I'm not saying that. We have plenty of room. We can tuck people in. We can get a bigger table.
You don't want to tuck it in.
He's been there for years.
I do, me.
Alrighty then.
Collins, the Buffalo Bill of Pittsburgh Comics.
You better watch it. He does have a hole down the basement.
That's why I gave Tim the lotion.
Will this be edited out?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
That's why I said I do me.
That's what really happened to Adam. He's just a skin suit now.
I'm Colin McManning, owner of Pittsburgh Comics. Joining me tonight are...
Dave.
Pat.
Mike.
Spencer.
Josh.
So you could have went with Buffalo Bill and he could have went with Leatherface. Just went around the table. We screwed it up. Chucky over there.
Sorry, Ibti sent me questions via email, and I went to print it, and the stupid. It's like this will not. This will print outside of the borders. It's like then wrap it at the end of the page. There.
You can't plan these things, Colin.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay. So, just the heading. So we have some seven questions from it. We have, what is the most sentimentally valuable comic book in your collection? Okay, no, I know only because I had one come in and it made me really, it was really funny. I have a lot that are, you know, valuable and that, you know, mean a lot to me, but these were funny ones that I kept. I remember I saw them when I was flipping through because I was looking for somebody was coming to a show and I wanted to have them sign something, but I guess I put it into stock when I opened. But I had collected, I kept these books. I think there were four of them. They were from Elson's, which was like a grocery store type thing that we must have gotten on some travels, and they were reprints of old DC stories, probably mostly from the 70s. And there were four of them. They just, and for some reason, when I, you know, I'm like, well, there's no point in selling these. These were just really good. So, and then one came in a collection one day, and I just remember setting it aside, going, cool. I remember this. There was like a green cover and a purple cover, and so for me, yeah, that. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that when I did my first show long ago, like '93, I brought my whole collection. I priced my whole collection. I brought everything. And I sold Daredevil 3, 4, and 5, and then spent 2 years buying replacement copies. So I realized there was really no point, and I needed to set some aside. So I have 6 long boxes that
Did you spend more on the replacement copies?
Oh, way more. Yeah, way more. and not in good a shape. One has water damage.
Well played,
you know, just,
sir.
Yeah, no, and that's when I realized that, no, I don't need to sell everything. And I kept 6 long boxes, and that's all I have. So in there's like a full run of Howard the Duck, full run of John Sable Freelance that I just love, and it would just be harder to replace than there's no reason to sell them at $3 a piece and then have to try to find them again. So I have a lot of that. Dave. Or anyone else, sorry. Don't have to go around.
I do. I have X-Men 111. That's with Byrne. First came on X-Men. And that really started getting me into comics. It was like 1978. I was probably like 11. And the other one is Avengers 128, which was Perez did inside, but it was Kirby cover. And I still have them to this day in my collection. And, you know, we'll not get to them. And I always go back and go, I remember these.
Right.
Buying those as a kid and stuff. It's just awesome.
For me, it has to be, I think I mentioned this one before.
Donald
but
Duck
something
number
from
one.
When I was young. Laugh Olympics number one.
Okay.
I read when Marvel was publishing the Hanna-Barbera books, the cover's like torn to pieces on the spine, and so I read that thing so many times.
Do you still have it?
I still have it.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
Anything special?
No, I mean the NAM number one, but only because my dad had it when I was younger.
Okay.
And we weren't allowed to read it
because
it's bad. And like I've read it. And
by today's standard, yeah.
Well, no,
so is your copy his copy?
No.
Oh.
No, I don't know what happened to his copy. He
wasn't allowed to touch his copy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know if, like, when he became a certain age, his
he
dad was like,
passed
Pat,
it on.
You were finally a man.
Yeah, here's the name.
Take my name.
Thank you, Josh. I kept it in. I didn't spray. Like, do you have anything special, Josh?
No, I don't really have any, like, comics that I'm sentimental about. I mean, there's plenty that I like. But nothing that has really, like, sentimental value. I guess the only thing that really would have sentimental value would just be the box set I mentioned before of Lock and Key that my wife got me for our anniversary.
Yep.
Our first anniversary, but other than that, like, no, like, individual issues that are sentimental value.
Okay. I don't know about sentimental, but I always, like, I think it was, like, a Spider-Man 500, because, like, that was whenever, like, I first started to, like, get into, like, actually collecting it and just, like, randomly picking stuff up, and that was kind of, like, the first big issue, and it was an end of, like, this story arc, and it was, like, right in the middle of Sinisky's and John Romita Jr. back when he had, like, really good art.
J. Scott Campbell cover.
Yeah, and stuff like that, and it was like he got to meet, like, you know, Uncle Ben through some kind of thing with Doctor Strange. He was able to kind of talk to, like, his Uncle Ben's, like, spirit and stuff. And he just kind of, you know, was telling him, like, how proud he was of, you know, Peter and stuff like that. And, like, made, like, really Ultimate Spider-Man, because, again, like, that was kind of, like, whenever I first started to get into collecting and those, like, kind of retelling of, like, classic Spider-Man stories that I knew about but haven't had to actually get a chance to read, but got to read, like, these new, like, updated versions of those stories.
Okay, sorry. I was making some notes about some news stuff I want to talk about. I know, crazy. Okay, what is the most underrated superhero team book out these days? Tim?
I really like the Terrifics.
Okay.
Yeah.
How that started off well, but it definitely has drifted in sales. The Terrifics was
how was the new creative team, Tim?
I think the first issue was good.
Okay.
I don't.
Outsiders.
I read that. That was
good. I've been a big Outsider fan. Like, I got all the Outsider series throughout the years. I could always do with more Outsiders.
Ooh, this one, number three is for you.
Supposed to be out these days. It's not for me.
Yeah, it is.
Who wants that? We'll get to that.
Okay. Well, you're the meat guy.
Yeah, but London Broil?
I don't know.
Dave, what do you say for team book?
I'm going to say Black Hammer.
Me too.
Heroes. I think they still...
See, they sell huge here.
Do they?
So.
Yeah, I think Black Hammer's pretty popular everywhere.
Yeah,
it's going to be a movie.
It sells about the same as X-Men.
I feel like it doesn't get
in the wrong circles.
Yeah, I'm Dave. Like, I'm running the wrong circles because I'm not hearing about it.
I mean, it's crossing over with Justice League.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say Wonder Twins, two people at the team.
It's not selling as well as I really hoped it would.
So Batman
but
and
my power guess, was not
if two people work together, would you consider
really
teamwork?
Sold, or is it more, it's just critically acclaimed?
Or not Frankenstein, Flintstones did very well.
Okay. Three, I'm going team. Two, I'm calling a duo.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if Spencer and I worked together on a project, could we say that we used teamwork on the project?
Problem.
Yes, but...
So team! Teamwork means team! Spencer! Yeah! Spencer! Yeah!
Be just partners?
Are you equal partners?
No.
No, obviously I'm
in your story.
Yeah, obviously he's the bottom, but
yeah. I'm the bear, he's the bottom.
Okay, number three. If you were given 15 pounds of USDA prime London broil as a birthday gift, would you be happy, sad, or indifferent?
I would not be happy about 15 pounds of London broil.
I'd just be confused.
Yeah, I'd be more confused than anything else.
I'd be confused.
London broil is a very tough meat. It is not. I mean, you can do good things. I mean, I guess you make a stew with it, maybe.
How much?
No, a lot of stew.
But 15 pounds is a lot of.
That's
a lot of meat.
Yeah.
So, like, how much stew can you possibly make?
Well, you freeze some, or you make it like for an event. Have people over.
Oh, just give me the
it's
money.
It's the London
Broil-a-thon.
Everybody come and have my stew.
Because 15 pounds, like, when I hear 15 pounds of meat, first of all, I'd be like, a smoker of some sort, but like, I don't know, a smoking
prime. You're not going to fit 15 pounds into a smoker, though.
Yeah, you are.
Of that much?
Yeah.
Really?
You could fit 15 pounds. Because you could always, you could cut it in half and do two shelves. Because if I do a pork shoulder, that's normally, 8 or 9 pounds.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And that fits on, one piece.
Number 4, what was your first comic book statue? And then there's a follow-up, which statue is your favorite?
Oh, damn it.
Oh, I know.
Bye, Tim.
Bye, Tim.
I think the first one I bought was the Sean Gordon Murphy Batman black and white statue.
It's a very recent.
Not the one that just came out.
Yeah, but still.
That's like 6 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking for me, it's real close because I started getting Bowen busts, first eBay purchase. So it's like $98.99. But then around then was when I got my Dark Knight Returns, when I won the Dark Knight Returns statue signed by Frank Miller at an auction. So one of those was my first. My favorite, gosh, it would probably be that Dark Knight Returns, but probably my favorite is my full-size Doctor Doom. That's just such an awesome, awesome piece. I have a lot of statues. A lot of statues.
See, I can't remember my first collection. One, but my favorite one is, I got it from here, it's Giant Man, the Bowen, with Wasp sitting on his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I'm like, get rid of everything else, but that's what I want.
I have an
In case you couldn't tell.
I have the bowl.
And then I have Yellow Jacket now, too, to go with it, which is cool.
Dave?
I do not own any statue.
Wow.
I've never owned one.
You're Spencer owns at least one.
I own a couple.
My favorite one, I have a Moon Knight one. That one's really cool.
And the nice thing now is you can get the PVC ones between $45 and $50.
Yeah.
And they're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That spider one in there with him crouching and on those webs in there, that's amazing looking. But my first was, I think it was the New 52 Green Arrow. He's standing and he's reaching into the quiver. Favorite would probably have to be the black and white Nightwing Jim Lee.
I could have said that.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds cool.
I knew that's what's.
See, I'm not a huge fan though of the New 52 Green Arrow. I much prefer the more.
I don't know if that was New 52 or that might have been pre-New 52. I know what you're talking about though.
Well, I have that one, but then I also have a bust of old school Green Lantern with a goatee and a hat, and he's aiming up into that. So I have both.
Yeah, I like that one better. Embrace the Robin Hood aspect of it.
I don't like that hat. I always thought that one looked kind of hokey.
Yeah, but the when the New 52 came out and he had the sunglasses and all that, he just looked like a giant douche.
He did look like a surfer bro, but that Lemire Sorrentino run was so effing good. Just saying.
Yeah, but it's a statue, so it's more like, what's the look?
But if it makes you think of if that statue makes you think of that run, which is perfection.
Mm. Okay.
It's really good. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
No, I have, but...
Okay, this one is for Spencer.
Oh.
Wow.
Well, no, it's for everyone, but... If a Nightwing movie ever gets made in our lifetime, would you rather have him face off against Deathstroke, Blockbuster, or a lesser-known Bat villain?
Polka Dot Man.
I would like...
Kite Man.
Either, the Blockbuster, or during that run, there was a Tourniquet. It was, Blockbuster, it was like a crooked detective, and they go into a fight, and he broke his neck and turned his head all the way around, and he had his brace. So now every time he walked, his head was facing the other way. So those kind of villains, and then have Deathstroke show up at the end, and that could be the sequel.
That's I think it depends on how you do the movie, because if you have it start with him as Robin, as the Teen Titans, and then Deathstroke shows up and then disappears for years, and then he goes through the Deathstroke movie, or the Nightwing movie, Deathstroke shows up at the end, and we find out he's behind what's been going on.
Yeah.
Would you want Rick or Dick?
Dick.
Thought so. Dick.
Mm-hmm. Would he have the Nightwing George Perez costume?
High collar.
Yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
I mean,
come on, that's got to be a scene.
If you make it somewhere. If you make it a period piece, that would work.
Yeah. If they if they could pull it off, yeah. Or at least if they just held it and was just like, wait, no, what was I thinking?
Put that back in the closet.
Of course, the problem is then if you went with that, then you'd have to go with the Robin with the short pants. So that could get a little disturbing, yeah. Oof.
Okay, next. Ridiculous Kaiju Battle, round two. Kaiju-sized Gumby versus Kaiju-sized Tinky Winky. Who's from the Teletubbies?
I don't know.
Okay, then Gumby, then.
Yeah. Tinky Winky is from the Teletubbies.
Gumby.
Teletubbies are dumb.
No, it's got to be Teletubbies because they're inherently evil.
It's Gumby. And he has Pokey and the Blockheads.
Well, it doesn't sound like against all four Teletubbies?
Well, it only says one.
Right.
But why does inherently evil automatically mean you win?
Just I'm sure they have something up their sleeve. I think Tinky Winky's the one with the purse as well.
Can we behead Tinky Winky?
But Gumby has something known as Word Pets and the Podcast Strength. You want me to say the word?
No.
Because you have to bleep it out.
No, that's okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about, Pat?
No.
Mm-mm.
R word.
Oh, Pat's word. Okay.
Yeah.
I said Pat's
word. I gotcha.
I just want to see how far I can push this.
Gotcha. Okay, number seven. Last question. Would you ever enter into a competitive eating contest? If so, what category?
I have.
Brisket.
Hot dog. Didn't go far, but... It's like
where was this contest at?
It was like a picnic somewhere or some festival or something, and then like anybody who wanted to, I'm like, all right, ate 10 hot dogs and was in the bathroom like 10 minutes later.
You only got the 10?
Dude, I couldn't eat more than 10.
It's nowhere near the record. Come on.
Sorry, Joey Chestnut has me.
It's not even like the qualifying rounds.
Yeah, I know. I embarrassed myself. Yeah.
And then you threw it all up. Jesus.
I didn't say I threw it up. Oh. He still was in the bathroom.
I wouldn't do well. I'd be interested in the chicken wing contest.
Oh, we did get some questions. They didn't
have that. I mean,
pie contest would be fun.
No, I saw Stand By Me. No, thank you.
No.
And I'll start vomiting.
I'm not doing it. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now we have a question. Will you ever run a promotion that besting a certain score on the Pac-Man machine earns you a percentage or dollar amount off your purchase?
I can answer this for you. No, he wouldn't. It would get too confusing. He would go into it thinking it was a good idea, then get super annoyed by it and say he's never going to sell again and he's closing the store. So that's the accurate answer for someone that has witnessed this before.
If people can't figure out the alphabet, then I think we're a long way off from automated machines. Besides, if he did that, then he'd have to have a gambling license, too.
Okay, Samara asks, do you agree that Captain America could always lift Thor's hammer, but chose not to in Age of Ultron to avoid upsetting him?
Yes.
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 I'd say he's always worthy. I don't know that he didn't in that instance, but yeah, I think he's always been worthy.
Do you think he knew he was worthy?
Yeah. Because he moved, when he picked, well, he didn't pick, but like he moved it, and Thor got an oh shit look on his face, and then I think he just, oh, okay, I can't.
Yeah. But he's definitely worthy, yeah.
And I think it had to do something with, too, in the movie. It's kind of like he needed to wield the hammer to, like, you know, it's kind of like the mom lifting up the car to get the baby out from it, like, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Vision did it. He doesn't even have a soul. I mean, come on.
Okay, so that's it for questions. We do have some news, lots of news. I don't know if you were paying attention last week. Last week was a big week for Marvel. It's all Marvel news, actually, to be honest.
Marvel 1000.
Well, we can start. I was going to start somewhere else. Hang on. They started off with the first announcement was Patrick Gleason signed a Marvel exclusive.
I thought we talked about that.
Did we? Taking over Spider-Man. Okay, so we talked about that. Never mind. Fine. Yes, Marvel 1000. I don't know what they were thinking, what they were doing.
What is it?
We don't know yet. No. I just found it a really odd way to do it.
It's just like an anthology book, right?
Right, but instead of saying, hey, we're coming out with this great special, and it's going to be, you know, 80 pages covering 80 years, and it has all these great creators, I think people would have been excited. The problem was the way they did it with release, having the creators release all these little images, just giving the creative teams, people started to get excited that they were going to be new creative teams on books.
That's what I thought.
And things so like that. Not. And then so when they finally released what it is,
it's
I think
like,
it was just
like, here's half a page by this creative team.
Yeah, it's 80 pages by 80 creators.
That's horseshit.
Right. So the problem is, I think then it led to a big letdown.
Because that's what I thought it was, and now you're telling me it's not me.
Aww.
Jesus.
And I'm thinking that some of them even are just going to be reprint stuff, like Kelly Sue. I don't think she's doing new Captain Marvel. I don't think George Perez is coming back to draw a page.
That's what I was like, oh, yeah. George is...
I think it's just going to be reprint stuff. Us. Yeah. So I just think just execution
you haven't bought it yet.
Was poor.
I'm not going to.
And also, we keep asking what the price will be on the Marvel retailer form, and he keeps being very evasive and not telling us. And it's
yes.
like... right, but it's like, so that
it
is just
be
like...
some form of currency.
Yeah, right. But it's like, how many currencies? But
just not saving now.
So is it a collected?
We don't know. They haven't announced what it is, other than saying that it's going to be a celebration.
So all they did is dangle these things out, yes. and they...
Yeah. I think that was a poor decision on their part.
That's clearly well thought out.
Yeah, and then I just think that was a mistake. And the name Marvel 1000, what does 1000 have to do with anything? It's really just, you know, again,
how many
riffing
companies
on
they bought this year?
Well, because no, it's just riffing
they're
on
hitting 80 years, and DC had 80 years and 1000 issues, so
right.
they're saying that must be 1000 issues
of what? Yeah. No, I get you. But I just think that they do that a lot. I remember way back when they were first doing Secret Avengers and they were giving silhouettes. And they started releasing them like on Thursday and then on Friday they told you what they all were. It's like, build up some suspense. You gave it away too early and nobody now cares. So they tend to do things like that. They
some
did also
people just have no self-control and they go early.
They also announced there's a new FF book featuring Yondu.
He's part of it.
Say what?
Yeah, and then they're also doing a Power Pack one-shot. Very exciting. And then the other big news was X-Men. They are canceling all of the entire X-Men line.
Because I thought about Spencer this, because Spencer made a great point. They've been doing a good job, and now they're just going to kill it again.
Well, what I...
They were doing a good job.
Yeah. What I enjoy is it just started like in January, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, so you're telling me this was the plan all along? Was that even though you started this off weekly and an $8 first issue that you were going to be ending it at whatever issue they're ending it?
Something, like 23?
Yeah, so it just seems really weird way to go about it. But apparently everybody's like, oh, this is going to be, you know, there was an ad in the books today saying, you know, these are seminal moments in X-Men history and this is the next one. And they're really building themselves up.
It was finally working, too. Like, they were finally on the road to fixing it. And now it's just going to be 80 confusing issues of Hickman that by the end you hope you can go, that was okay, I think.
And here's if he... and that's if he even finishes it. That's even if he finishes it.
Well, that's a story.
So how many active X-Men books are they going to destroy and revamp? How many X-Men books are
there? Well, there's not a lot. There's really just Uncanny.
X-Force...
Yeah, there's X-Force, I'm assuming Dead Man Logan will be done by then, Mr. and Mrs. X, that'll be done, Domino is just a mini-series, and then all these other, but the problem is it says that all this Age of X-Man doesn't mean anything, you know, it's not going to lead into the next thing, because he's just...
You can stop ordering it now, then.
But it's over now.
Well, the problem is that we're concerned that people will stop ordering it now, and we're not going to sell them. But and then it leads to fun things like this headline that Marvel X-Men just became Marvel's most exciting franchise. Why? I haven't even ordered number one yet of the miniseries leading into the new X-Men. So they're putting a lot of weight and hope on this Hickman run. And granted, they know what it is, and you're seeing people, you know, saying, oh, you know, the pitch was the greatest thing I've ever heard. It's like...
DC did the same thing, though, when Bendis came over.
Yeah.
But, and it's not even like... Because with all the promotional stuff, too, it's not like, hey, we're getting to see stuff like the classic X-Men of, like, you know, teams that we've always loved. It's like, no, you get, like, a future red Nightcrawler and, like, a female Colossus and, like, these weird, like X-Men from the future but also from the past. And...
Isn't a red Nightcrawler just as easel?
When's it supposed to start, Colin?
Soon, I think.
No, the miniseries starts in July, and that runs for 6 weeks, so I think six...
So if you're...
No, not 6 weeks. It runs for...
Because it's every other...
12 weeks.
So if you're a current reader...
Yeah.
Why? Because it's all going to get destroyed. And if you're working on these books, I'm pissed. Because I've worked hard...
Apparently they said they were told this from the beginning.
Bullshit. There's no way.
Because I can't imagine then they go, they just, yeah, sure, you're going to ruin my book midway
through. Sure, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, take everything I've done and throw it
so,
away.
So, we'll see where it goes.
I mean, granted, it's not creator owned. When you're playing in someone else's sandbox, you got to play by the rules. But, yeah, that would piss me off.
Yeah, that, absolutely.
Hey, but the other thing is, you're relaunching it again, so this will be two Uncannies in 1 year, you know, number one
if
in 1 year.
If they even do an Uncanny after this.
Well, it sure makes it easy to catalog your books at number one, number one.
Yes, so, not thrilled about that. David Harper just restarted his Sketched website. I signed up for that. It's
if they want to do something cool X-Men related, Byrne's been dying to do like Hidden Years, like quote unquote.
They said they were talking to him, but now they're doing this. Unless this is one, that's one of the things that spins out of it.
He's got it like sketched out.
I keep wondering how real
he that has. Is. He has pages. Yeah. He's even done pages for him.
I don't know. I'm just questioning how serious he is about getting back in with Marvel.
You pay him the money, he'll do anything.
Yeah. Sadly, that's about where he is now.
Yeah, seriously. But he'll do it for money.
So I'm cautiously optimistic, let's put it that way. But I was just listening to his episode 200 where it's a big conversation with him. Mm-hmm. And it's like I need to listen to it again and take notes and then send off emails to him about some things that he said. But it's been good. But yeah, so I'm hopeful it's some journalism. Where I think we've been sorely lacking in journalism. And it was funny because somebody posted something about Bleeding Cool. I'm like, I don't read Bleeding Cool anymore. So sorry I missed it. So that's all the news I have. Anybody else have anything?
No, that was my big thing. I was just perplexed.
As am I.
He has that much power to just shut everything down.
Mm-hmm. Because they want him so bad. Well, they need a big name because just doing another Uncanny X-Men number one buy won't do anything. But with him attached, you know, it's big picture.
Is he that big enough a name for them?
I think he is. He's Morrison-esque and saying Morrison is revamping the X-Men type of thing is what basically what they're saying. So we'll see. It's going to be in the execution. So, so that's all I got for news. Who wants to talk about books since I only read four because I'm bad?
We'll talk about your four then.
Yeah. Making me start again?
Go for it.
You know why?
No.
Because when you start, then you're like engaged as we talk about the books.
Okay. That's,
yeah.
These Savage Shores, number four. Anybody read those?
No.
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 Savage what?
I love this book. I love this
book.
What the hell
is
that? And thank goodness. One, two, and three, we're getting, third prints of one and second prints of two and three are coming in next week along with a reorder of four. This is by Rom V. This is from Vault Comics, and this has been one of the most fascinating things I've read in a long time.
That's cool.
I have a lot of respect for Rom. He's done some books that nothing's really taken off. He's doing Paradiso right now is another one. But he came out last year it's further down. I might not even have any, so just wait till next week. But he came out to the Comics Pro meeting in Portland last year on his own. He had no table. He just wanted to talk to us. And I'm like, that takes guts. That takes somebody going, I know what I want to do. It wasn't the last meeting. It was the 1 year ago in Portland. And I just thought that, I'm like, okay, you know what, that gumption, that's probably the best word for that. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to look a little closer at this guy and see what he's doing. He had done a teleconference with us. He did another book. I forget what it was. It was like a post-apocalyptic one. And it was interesting, but I didn't read too much past it. But I'm like, wow, this guy really is trying. You know, he's going above and beyond. He's just not putting the book out and just letting it sit on the shelf. So I made a point to order that one up a little and read it when it came out. And it is fascinating. It's turn of the century, 1900s, in like India, somewhere around there, about a trade route. England is trying to establish a trade route in this country to just shorten distance. What's and stuff like again? That. These Savage Shores. And so they're doing this, and then it goes into a story where the guy that is there, kind of hitched a ride with everything, is a vampire who got exiled from London to get him. He was like a noble, and they had to get him out of the country, so they put him on this boat, and he went along with the team for that. And then it gets into some mythology, and there's this bodyguard for the... And then the king was killed, and now his young son is ruling, and he has an advisor. He also has this bodyguard, and this bodyguard is more than he appears to be. And the vampire guy starts going after this dancer girl, who's the bodyguard's girlfriend. And the next thing you see is the issue ends with this noble vampire guy's head, somebody carrying his head. And you're like, whoa, the entire book was about this guy, and he's dead at the end. And it's going into a lot of like mythology that this guy is actually an ancient creature and stuff. And it's just been fascinating. This other now country is coming to declare war. It's just, I'm reading four going, I need to read the other issues. I don't remember the, and it's been a little slow coming out. But the art is fantastic. Somebody I don't know, some Indian artist. Mm. But it's just been really, really good. I can't wait for the trade to come out, and because I will be beating people over the head with that, because it has been just really, really an outstanding book. I can't recommend this one more.
Who's the publisher?
Vault. This is one from Vault. Yeah, it's just a really neat book, and nothing I've never read anything, you know, telling this kind of story before. So I'm really enjoying it. All the way around. Next one, Excellence. This was from Image. This was a neat one. There's this kid, and he's growing up, and he's in this magical family. And there's like 10 or 12 magical families that protect, and their entire mission is to help others, but not themselves. And the kids, when they're born by a certain age, like 5, they show their magical abilities, and this kid doesn't. And they keep training him, but nothing is clicking. It's not working for him until he's like 12 or 13. And then everyone's mocking him because, you know, oh, you're not a true and all this stuff. And he finally goes in to take his powers kind of finally show up. And he goes to take his test, which is, you know, this challenge where these other magicians go against him. And then it flashes back to he's getting his hair cut by his grandmother. And he asks her if his dad had asked for any hints or clues as to what to do. And she's like, no, you know, we never do that. You know, that would be wrong, blah, blah, blah. And as he's walking out, he kind of turns his, looks back and goes, okay, what's the secret? And so grandma then tells him the secret, and he passes his test. Doing stuff that he shouldn't have done, but he still passed because he was able to accomplish the goal. Then his grandmother is struck by something, and he could fix her easily with his powers and stuff, but he's not allowed to because they're not allowed to help their own. So she's just going to wither away and die now, and you can kind of see at the end that he's like, I don't like these rules, and he's going to break that rule as well. But it was really, really, really well done. I was quite impressed with that. Next one, Batman and the Outsiders, number one. I read it. I thought it was good. I didn't have a problem with it. Yeah. Tony Isabella apparently lost his mind.
Really?
And saying that, oh, apparently now Black Lightning is now Batman's house Negro and stuff. And it's like, So I'm reading it after.
I must have missed something.
Yeah, I'm reading it after hearing this going, I just saw he wanted him to help train these people from the detective run.
Yeah.
It was basically Batman was saying, hey, you lead.
Yeah.
If this is your job, and
yeah, so
to me that it became like the new Detective Comics.
Yeah.
It was like, this is very fun, and all the characters were there. And I'm like, when he made those comments about Black Lightning, I'm like, what is he talking about?
Yeah. I'm like,
I'm like, did you read a different book than I did?
Or he read it with a... Well, this I think he might have been angry going in because he didn't authorize it or something. I don't know.
Is this a second... This is the second version of Batman the Outsider.
Yes, right? Yes. There was one back in the 80s.
Well, no. I thought that... Yeah, this got delayed because
DC didn't.
Maybe it was the first version he was talking about?
I don't know. I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline, but I was just like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't take it that way at all. I mean, everybody looks to Batman as kind of being on high. And, yeah, he did go to Batman to get some guidance about what the hell he was doing. But it wasn't like he didn't know how to be a hero or he was kissing Batman's ass. He's like... You stuck me with these people. None of them want me here. What do you want me to do?
But I loved when he was calling in help and Dick. Oh, Dick's Rick. No, he's not coming.
I liked it
too. Oh, no, never mind. No, I'm sorry. That was in Batman today. Never mind. Sorry.
I liked
I'm blending my Batman
stories. I liked the team that they have put together. Mm-hmm. The artwork was fantastic too.
I'm not a big fan of Duke. Duke's just an asshole.
Well,
I think Duke was better before he was the Signal.
Yes. Yeah, well, yeah. When they did the We Are Robin, I liked them in that.
Hmm.
It'd be interesting to see how he's going to fit on the quote-unquote team, though. Yeah.
And then the last one I read was Flash 70, which was part one of...
I read that. Yeah, I read that, too.
Look at that. Everybody at the table read that.
Dave, you read it?
No? Oh, I thought you did. Just I thought you raised his hand. Yes. No. Okay. But basically, it's Flash year one. You know, retelling his origin, and I'm sure they're going to add stuff in. Yeah. But pretty much, it was a pretty standard retelling of his origin.
He goes through a lot of sneakers.
He does go through a lot of sneakers. That was cool. I think on the cover it has him on a pile.
Yeah.
But then it shows him running at the end, and he actually time travels into the future where he meets himself.
Which I guess is supposed to be like a throwback to his first appearance in the whatever showcase it was.
Oh, okay.
I guess in his
I've never read that.
So. Because Joshua Williams was on last week's Comics Conspiracy and they were talking about it.
I didn't listen to that.
And I guess like he was saying in his first appearance back then, they did a story where like he ran and went to the future and met his future self and like they never came back to that story, I guess, ever. So,
it's just him going back to that story.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
That's a deep cut callback.
And the art in it is great. Howard
Porter art, yeah.
Yeah, Spencer had been talking about Flash for a while, and then I saw this, and like I've been a long time Flash, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was like what a comic book should be.
Yeah.
It was just so cool. And the very last page is it's kind of like a cliffhanger. You're just like, oh, you can do that still.
Yep.
It was very cool.
It was nice seeing a Barry Allen in a Flash book that is having fun again.
Yeah.
And not just like...
He's not burdened by life yet.
Super serious and kind of a dick. Because even like in the Justice League book, Barry still like kind of goofs around a little bit and has fun. Like in the main Flash book, he's just been very, you know, super serious and like kind of an a-hole. So it was nice seeing him... You know, enjoy himself.
Oh, I like how he's up in the attic reading comics.
And yeah.
Go, all
yeah.
The comics that was just awesome.
Yeah. Dave.
Wonder Twins, number 4.
On my list.
You just gave up your list.
No, it was next on. I didn't read it yet. It would have been the next book I read.
This is the Date Night issue. With both Zan and Jaina getting dates at the science fair. And Jaina dates a guy who turns out to be a villain named Red Flag, which is just a fantastic character name, and just so much good stuff in this book. I could just go read it again and pick up stuff like the Lex News poster that's in the background.
Yeah, we're as angry
as you are. And there's a supervillain mixer with the supporting characters, Philo Math, and his daughter finds out he's working with the supervillains or working with Lex Luthor.
Yeah, because we found out there's that mixer, so the Justice League takes the night off essentially to focus on cosmic threats since the Legion of Doom isn't going to be, you know, doing anything.
So you think if you know the whole Legion of Doom is going to be there, that's the night you show up to take care of it. But, you know. Yeah, you know, let's wait till they get another Doomsday device, then we'll take care of it.
So then, yeah, Jaina meets this guy at the science fair, and he says he has a work thing, wants her to hang out. Zan meets this girl at the science fair, and invites her on a date, and then Jaina ropes the one girl into going with her, and they find out that the place they're going to is that the work event the guy had. He was a waiter at this, you know, villain's mixer, and
yeah,
that's how the girl bumps into her dad, and then Zan's on the date and runs into the girl's ex-boyfriend, and then they end up getting back together on the date, which he's fine with.
That was great. And when I'm in the friend zone, he was so happy.
Yeah.
After they went to the movie, they went to see was Gun Cop.
It was good. It was a good issue.
Just great. Bronze Age Boogie.
Didn't get to that.
Number two.
From Ahoy.
This issue takes place in 1975. The character Britta Constantina, who's the daughter of a barbarian, traveled to 1975, and she's fighting a Martian invasion with Linda Dark, and there's a new character, Jackson Lee, who's a master of Kung Fu. And they're just throwing, you know, all this Bronze Age stuff into the mixer and seeing what they get. I don't know if it's not grabbing me. Still not grabbing me as much as some of the other Ahoy titles, just because there's so much going on, I think. But it's really well done. And the art's great too. Red Sonja and Vampirella
meet Betty and Veronica.
Number one.
Thumbs up. Thumbs down.
Thumbs up. Yeah.
Betty and Veronica. Of course Dave's going to give it a thumbs up.
Let's see, have you read an Archie-related book that you haven't liked?
Probably.
It's not a yes.
I can't think of one top of my head. But
How do they meet, or how do they get together?
Well, they Red Sonja and Vampirella come to Riverdale to investigate a murder spree by something called the Cult of Chaos.
Riverdale must be like right by the main highway with the way people just keep on falling in all the time. Like,
wait, is Vampirella a good guy or like a hero or a villain?
She's a hero in this. I've never read any Vampirella.
I find that hard to believe.
Really, you strike me as a Vampirella kind of
I know it's hard to believe.
I got to imagine at some point, though, they're going to get Betty and Veronica and Vampirella in Red Sonja's costumes. Because the same way they did it with Poison Ivy and Harlequin.
Didn't read it.
They go to Red Sonja and Vampirella, go to the morgue. And
when he's thinking of Veronica dressed like Vampirella right now.
Well, they run into Betty and Veronica at the morgue. And
don't besmirch Steve
them,
like
they
that.
They take them back to the Lodge Mansion to get them new clothes so they can fit in at Riverdale High School. And Betty,
well, I think they would have fit in just fine.
Yeah, well, Betty's like, I think they're a little bit old, too old to be in high school, if you know what I mean. And Red Sonja ends up on the football team, and there's another murder. So the funny thing is they don't, it's probably a good thing they didn't explain it, but they don't explain how Red Sonja and Vampirella end up in Riverdale. It's just accepted.
They're just there.
Yeah, they just cross the street, you know, from Hurricane or whatever.
Yeah, like, if you're going to say that they're somehow in the same universe, why is Red Sonja in the future?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they don't explain it. It'd probably be too much to try to do that.
It's comics, so you don't need to explain it.
We need a little explanation.
BS. There was a dimensional portal that opened. They fell into it and ended up in Riverdale.
Were they in a hot tub?
No. No hot tub.
Are you referring to a movie that handles time travel well?
Yes. That's issue 3
now.
Okay.
No, they just show Archie for 1 second, but he's like, this story isn't about Archie, so we're not going
to... But Archie wishes it was
about him. Archie wishes it was, but no.
Next. It's no Archie versus Predator, though, is it?
Not yet. No, it's not.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to Volume 2.
Yeah, Archie versus Predator, that's very much on the high end of these things. Ice Cream Man, number 12. This is the last issue of this Hopscotch Melange arc, which has been covering different genres. This is a science fiction story. It's about a Captain Noah Smith, who's on a spaceship by himself, to make a new Earth, because he's carrying a hard drive filled with pictures of everything that's every living thing that's coded with genetic material, so he can just place these things on Earth and build a new Earth, because Earth has been destroyed through some kind of oblivion of global warming and disease and everything you can imagine. So he's on the ship by himself, and he runs into a meteor shower, and he has to make a crash landing and amid these space spiders. And when he crashes on this moon, he gets a radio signal from another human. So he goes to investigate in a cave, and the Ice Cream Man shows up, and everything pretty much goes to hell, which I won't give away. It's, you know, I just really enjoy this series. It's just different every issue. It really makes you think.
Is there more after this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's taken a month off, and it's going to be back in July with number 13. And every issue has been just really solid, I think.
Now, not to give it away, Dave, but did it involve giant apes and a Statue of Liberty head?
No. Okay. No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Because
that was effective.
It goes in a different direction. Okay. That's all I got.
Pat, did you read Black Hammer 10?
I read it, but I can leave it for you.
Okay.
The Batman Who Laughs, number 5.
Yep. I read that. Yes.
Do you have any idea what's actually going on in this book?
No. Okay. Not even a little bit.
I got like 10% of what's going on last issue.
I have no idea like what continuity it's in or anything. Like I
took all the issues home to read.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
It you looks don't cool, know why you enjoy it.
But yeah, I don't understand.
I definitely cool. believe it is not in mainline continuity. No.
It's so weird.
And as I was reading it, what I meant to do is write out all the letters that are in red.
Yeah.
To figure out what the message is.
Yeah. There is a message. If you follow, there is a message going through there.
Because it was like M-O-N, S-T-E-R, and it's like, okay, so I'm a monster or something like. But I never wrote the whole thing out to try to figure out what the message was.
It's like a little too much like homework.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have to do a book report.
Well, it's kind of what we do here, so.
I mean, it's fun that you... Like Josh was saying, you don't know what you're reading or what's going on yet, but yeah.
I'd say I don't know how they're going to wrap this up in one issue, but since I really don't know what's going on. I think
it's
going
one more, isn't it?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, okay, it got bumped to 7?
You got one more, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe they'll wrap it up then. I kind of feel the same way about Heroes in Crisis, where
But see, the thing, though, too, you know, is, like, whatever happened, it's not going to be, like, the end for the Batman Who Laughed, because he's going to be in that Superman book that's coming out.
In the Year of the Villain thing, yeah.
And stuff like that, so it's not like, oh, this might be, like, the end of the Batman Who Laughs, so, like, you know.
Well, that's why I don't think it's in main continuity. I think it's its own contained universe. Yeah.
Which is fine.
And also, because there's so much multi-dimensional stuff going on anyway, this could have been pre-metal. He was going into, you know, different worlds, and he just did it on this world, too. Because I don't even know... Well, no, because the Grim Knight is in it, so maybe it... You know, who knows? It's confusing.
Yeah, I think it's in its own world, like you're saying.
So,
I have the message here.
What is it?
Myself, time to form, id. I am so slaughter, Bruce. I'm real. You're off. Stop you, Bruce. Get out, Bruce, now. Severe war. show you who I am, hear me. I will come for you. I will come for you and everyone you love, and I will make what happened to this Bruce Wayne here look like a day of mercy. Why? Because I'm the Batman who laughs, so follow me down. I dare you. Be better to stop. Ready, set off city. Shut down safety. Voice saying change. You win, monster. And it hasn't worked. Through new eyes.
So somebody went through and got all the red.
For all the issues. Like, there's issue 4 here. I think it's been in all the issues.
It's been in all the issues, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, ongoing, yeah.
I mean, it's not bad, but I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
No, it's quite good. Like,
I'm glad I'm not. It's really enjoyable. On that
yeah. No. If you held a gun to my head and said, "Explain the story so far," I'd be like, "Multiple Bruce Waynes. The main Batman is wearing the spiky visor.
Eugenics and all that other crazy stuff."
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Slowly becoming the Batman who laughs.
Detective Comics.
Yeah, I read that.
I read that.
Okay. So, I don't know how I feel about this. I like the fact that it's not Jason Todd, because we find out who
it is.
Arkham is. Yeah. Or Arkham Knight. Arkham Knight is.
Yeah.
And it's
Astrid Arkham.
Yeah. So I'm glad it's not Jason Todd, yeah. But I don't know. And a thing where she just let Damian go after he was fighting them the whole way. It's like,
I like that. Yeah. Because that was unexpected. And to see her
turn
on her soldiers because they, you know,
shot him.
Attacking him. And it makes me, it plays towards this whole, like, you know, bigger plan she has as a way to try and, you know, woo Damien to her side somehow, which I don't think that will work. It's Damien, but
I get that, but that's just it. She seems to have all the answers, but from a tactical point of view, why do you let him go? Why do you, you know?
Because she doesn't perceive Batman or him as a threat. That's why. And so far, Batman has not been a threat.
No, that's true.
And then he made the smart observation not to go directly because he was afraid he was being tracked.
Mm-hmm. Right, so yeah.
He did that. I enjoyed the parts with Damian, but anytime this guy draws Batman and his... I cringe. I just...
Like, oh, I didn't notice any issues with that.
Look the way he draws his... they're like goggles. And I'm just like, no. He's like, he should be underwater. It just drives me nuts as an artist.
I mean, he was underwater at one point, though.
No, if you look at it, do you have any...
I'll grab it after this.
Yeah. But I'm with Pat. I'm like, I don't know if I like it. Do I like it?
I don't dislike it.
Yeah, I don't dislike it, but I'm reading it going, okay.
And one of the things I do like is Batman and Detective have been so similar the past couple months. It's diverging, and I kind of like that, but at the same time, I'm just like, okay.
But it's also kind of similar in the fact that it's like, in both books, you have this secret enemy that's been slowly playing against you to take you over.
But Damian was in it, so that was cool.
I do like Batman and Damian being back together, especially with Tomasi, you know, writing them again.
And he had a Monty Python reference. It's just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
As he has an arrow going through his shoulder.
Yeah. But that is a Damian thing to say. Yes. So it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Shazam, number 5.
You haven't read it yet.
No?
You can talk about it.
Okay. So it starts with Black Adam, and you know, he kind of monologues about how he doesn't understand why the wizard gave Shazam his powers, because he's stupid and he's going to destroy all of magic because he doesn't know what he's doing. In the meantime, we see Shazam basically, I don't know if he's pleading, but almost pleading with King Kid or Kid King, whatever, about, you know, you bring these kids here and then, you know, after they turn 18, you throw them down into the dungeon basically to make Fun World run, and, you know, it's not okay. And then he removes the, it looks like a piece of metal. It's just chained around her mouth.
Yeah, because a couple of issues ago that he, when he saw Billy and some of the other kids say
Shazam.
It was like a gag kind
of
thing.
But it wasn't. It almost looked like a piece of sheet metal. It looked like, okay, she should still be able to talk. But so Mary says Shazam and, you know, then transforms. And she says something like, yes, I'm stunning or
I'm stunning. Yeah, I know I'm stunning or something like that.
And so it's a, you know, a cheesecake one-page spread of her. That's absolutely what it is. And then Eduardo and Darla, I think it is, are on the animal world. They go to a court, and it's literally a kangaroo court. And they get sentenced for being humans in animal world, and their sentences are going to be fed to the tigers. In the meantime, Talkie Tawny, who in one of the issues when he was first introduced is in a suit and all that, well, tigers are kept wild on that world because they apparently sided with the humans and couldn't be trusted. And, you know, he's trying to talk his way out. He's like, no, I'm not like the other tigers. I'm, you know, here for animals. I'm trying to be civilized. The mare is an elephant, and he beats the hell out of him. He's like, no, you're a tiger. So what I think is going to happen is he's going to be the tiger that saves them and then probably goes back, and that's how they introduce that.
Is this Jeff Johns still writing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's Jeff Johns.
Cool. So you're getting all that old, like, all that old-timey, like, goodness from, like, just the weird, like,
it
crazy
sounds very
stuff.
Commandy weird, kind of, like, with the animals.
Yeah. And then you had whoever the other... Freddy and I forget who the other
one was. No, I think it was Freddy and...
Maybe it's Freddy and Darla and Eduardo and Eugene.
Yeah. Well, Freddy and Darla was in the animal ward, and then the other two were in the game ward.
Yeah, and...
The one that's normally, like, the hefty kid.
Yeah.
And then the Asian kid. I always forget. I forget all the other ones.
One of them's Eugene, I think. But I don't remember what the other... What is it?
Hefty is not a nice term.
Oh, he's fat.
Yeah.
Chunky? Under tall?
Yeah.
Under tall.
His BMI would be right if he was just taller. There.
He was 6'3".
That's right. So... they're in the game world, and apparently you have to get a gamer card in order to take on the game master, and then you can get out of there. So they agree to do it, but in order to get a game card immediately, they had to transfer 10,000 points. So when the Asian kid, and I don't remember what his name is, and I want to call
Gene.
Him.
That's
Gene?
I think the Asian kid's Gene. Yeah.
Okay. So he gives up the points. He's like, don't worry about it because I can beat him. I've been playing games my whole life. And then they say, oh, well, now you have negative 10,000 points. You can't even be on this level anymore. So you go, you know, you're gone. And then the kid that's never played video games now has to take on the Game Master. That's, at that point, it cuts back to Black Adam. Dr. Savannah shows up and says, you know, you have two choices. You either join Mr. Mind Society or die. And that's where it's left.
Well, I think when he says something, oh, third choice, I destroy you all. Something, he says something very Black
Adam.
Yeah,
it's a very Black Adam thing to say, yeah. But it's been a really interesting series so far.
Do you not read it, Dave? I figured Shazam would be up your alley. I figured that would, like...
You don't read much DC except for, like, Mark Russell stuff, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I leave that stuff for you guys to talk about, honestly.
But do you read it?
I mean, you're allowed to read it if you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It sounds fun, just the way Pat was.
Yeah, it does.
It is. It's a fun... It reminds me a lot of the movie, and it's just... It's fun. Don't go in there expecting something
and
serious.
And I don't think we've seen any other, like... DC characters interact in this story yet. It's kind of
are
vague.
They mentioned anywhere?
No, not really.
Okay,
but really, it started off with, you know, the first issue was really an introduction to the Shazam family, and they got on a train and went to the Magic Lands. So they haven't even gotten into the main DC.
Because they're still even waiting in the first or second issue. They reveal that Billy's dad is back, but they haven't done anything with that since he, you know, they've been away. So that's the whole other thing when they get back, you know.
Yeah. And the last one I read was Ronin Island number 3. which I don't think Colin has any more of.
No. And I don't even get to read it.
Oh, well, that's because you grabbed number one.
I know.
So it, on this one, five of the people leave the island to go to the Shogun, and it's like a 3-day walk, and you know the one kid that wears a samurai armor is getting ready to fight the monsters, and then the general's like, well, if you do that, we'll be here, you know, we'll never stop doing this, and we'll all be dead in 3 hours, so just let them go, they're not going to catch us, keep moving. And then as they go further, one of the guys that's with the general recognizes one of these monsters as someone from their village. So what they realize is it's something is turning them into these monster zombie things. When they finally get to where the Shogun, or they're supposed to walk to the castle, and they get up on top of a hill and see like an encampment with the Shogun's tents, and are like, he left the castle, and now it's surrounded by these zombie creatures. So they go down and help fight. The Shogun is batshit nuts, so he fires the general and makes the kid from the island who had samurai armor, he said, well, he has a true samurai's heart. General, you're fired. He's the new general of the armies. And like, he knows nothing about what's going on. He's a kid. He's never been in a real fight, just training fights. It was just made the general. So that's where it ends. But it's an interesting series. There's a lot of stuff with, like, the one girl who was kind of like his rival in training was clearly the better fighter, at least in this. And she's dismissed because she's not Japanese, she's Korean. And then one of the women that were with the Shogun's caravan was Thai. And it was the same thing. You know, if you're not Japanese, you're kind of relegated to the underlevels of society. Which is the opposite of the island where they all banded together. It's interesting.
Sounds cool.
Mike?
Mine that I read that everyone else hasn't mentioned is Black Hammer 10, which was just freaking awesome. Lucy, who is quote-unquote the Black Hammer now, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Is encountering people that they no longer have memories. And to get them out of the memory, she's got to beat them in the head with a hammer.
Yeah.
And she wakes up, was it Abe? The first one?
Yeah, Abe is the first one.
Yeah, and then she's encountering some other people. I don't want to give out the entire story. And then brings back the old lady to her.
That, yeah.
Was very cool.
Gail was hilarious because she's like an old woman in a nursing home or something.
And then who's the alien, the old, is it Captain or what is his name?
Colonel Weird.
Colonel Weird, yeah. And then you're just like, okay, everything's going to come back to normal because it's been kind of like not so normal. You're like, what's going on? Because nobody remembers the world. All the world was a big fake thing.
Yeah.
And then the last page, you go, bam, she sees somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to spoil it. It was like, holy crap, how's this going to happen?
Yeah.
So it's probably one of my top five books I've been reading. It's just been fantastic. Lemire just knocks it out of the park. And the artwork is just continues to be
fantastic. Yeah, I love fantastic. His art. It just fits it perfectly.
Yeah. But yeah, when she's, and they're like, well, you're going to have to hit her. And she's like, I can't hit an old lady with a hammer. And I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah,
she hits
that stuff
hammer.
With Golden Gale. That was great. Was just awesome. That was the best part of the book. Yeah.
So if you're not reading the Black Hammer, any of the Black Hammer, do yourself a favor and go get it. It's awesome. That's it for me.
The only thing that I have that nobody else has read yet is the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. So this issue starts out with Spider-Man. He has this new sidekick, Spider-Bite. It's this little kid in like his own kind of little Spider-Man outfit, and they are taking on all of Spider-Man's like bad guys. Like it starts out with like Doc Ock and Vulture, and like they're trying to escape. They have you know, they're trying to keep this thing in this box away from them, that, you know, that they're all chasing, and they finally get trapped in this the train station, and Green Goblin's there, and Spider-Man is like, you know, is it the Sinister Six? And he's like, no, it's the Sinister 60, and it's like all of like Spider-Man's villains in the background and stuff. And so they're having this big fight with all of them and stuff, and it's slowly, the backgrounds kind of slowly start to change. They become more cartoony, and when you show that you realize is that Spider-Man's actually been like in this children's like cancer ward, and he's like playing around with this kid, and they gave him like Spider-Man mask, so they're acting like, you know, he's helping him fight all of his evil you know, all of his bad guys and stuff like that, and they're on top of like these cardboard boxes and stuff, and like the staff members are dressed up as the bad guys, and like that's who they're like fighting and stuff like that, and so they take a break from, you know, finding the bad guys, and the kid's like tired and he starts to cough a little bit, and so they try to get him to go to bed, and you know Spider-Man's like, hey, you know, it's been, you know, great hanging out with you and stuff, and you know, the kid's like, well, I don't want to go to bed, and he's like, well, you've had a big day, you should probably, and he has a moment, and he's like snaps at Spidey, he's like, he screamed out and that he doesn't want to go to bed, and he's like, he immediately just like, I'm sorry, I didn't want to ruin it, and, you know, Spider-Man's comforting him, telling him, like, no, you didn't ruin anything, and stuff like that, so, like, the nurses take the kid off to the side for a little bit, and he's talking to the kid's parents, and, you know, they're just thanking him so much for, you know, coming out and seeing him and stuff, and he asked, you know, because the kid's still upset, you know, about how, you know, about snapping at Spider-Man and stuff, and he's really sorry. So Spider-Man asks his parents if he had any, like, if he has a coat or anything. So, like, the end panel is, like, Spider-Man swinging with, like, holding the kid all, like, you know, bundled up and stuff. So it's just, like...
So he took him out of the hospital?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Because, in the previous issues, they revealed that, Aunt May has breast cancer. So it's like him trying to...
Can you get breast cancer at 102?
I don't know. I'm not the one doing the exam.
Yes, you can. If you still have breasts, you can get breast cancer.
But it was just a real nice, like, touching issue.
That sounds too. Fun. That yeah. sounds really cool. Hmm. What issue is that on?
It's like 6 or 7, something like that.
Who's the writer?
Tom Taylor. And that's it. Everything else we've talked about already.
Hawkman 12. So this wraps up the first, like, big arc for this book. It's the last issue for Brian Hitch. This was cool. So in the past 2 issues, they've been Hawkman and all of the previous incarnations of himself have been battling the Deathbringers. In the last issue, like, he summoned all these, you know, versions of himself, and he's using them as his army to fight the Deathbringers. But it looked like at the end of the issue, the Deathbringers were just, you know, there were so many of them that it looked like his forces were not going to be able to hold them off. So that was my only issue with this issue is that suddenly it seemed like his forces, you know, mustered up the strength to suddenly, like, you know, really then take it to the Deathbringers and take down their big, you know, warship robot looking things that were about to destroy the planet. The main Hawkman, he's fighting the, you know, other current general of Deathbringers who used to be his subordinate, and had a moment where he, you know, says to him, like, well, since you're saying that you're immortal and you can't be killed, I guess I don't have to take it easy on you, I don't have to hold back. So almost like a Superman moment of, you know, I guess I can give you everything I have now, and then suddenly just, like, you know, kicked his ass without much effort. So some of that felt like it was a bit, you know, weird in the change from the issue 11 to issue 12. But overall, the issue was fun. It was neat seeing, like, the Kryptonian version of Hawkman realizing that, you know,
the extent of his powers being a Kryptonian on Earth with the yellow sun and all these Deathbringers like unloading guns on him, and then him just, you know, realizing like, oh, these aren't actually going to hurt me. I can just, you know, use my laser eyes that I hear I have and just destroy this ship.
Is Hitch writing it as well?
No, Venditti is writing it.
Okay.
It's been really good. It's been a really good book so far. And even this issue was really good. It was a weird, you know, shift in tone from like the end of issue 11 to the beginning of this issue. And the main, you know, Carter Hall reclaims his position as general of the Deathbringers just so he can command them to stand down and like send them off, you know, on a new mission of like peace and free all the slaves they've captured over the years. And then there's one Deathbringer that doesn't stand down and is making his way towards him, and you find out that's the original, you know, incarnation of Carter Hall. And they have this moment, and then suddenly, like, he returns all of his memories to him at once. So they all come, like, flooding back. And the issue ends with him going to see, you know, his, like, main nemesis through this issue. And this guy essentially, like, you know, tells him he knows what's coming, and he knows that, you know, even though Carter Hall may, you know, be trying to redeem himself now and a good man, he knows that there is death and blood, you know, coming, and it's, you know, it'll be at his hand. So like this, you know, looming foreshadowing that he will be returning to like his murderous ways somehow. So, yeah, the book's continuing with Venditti, just a new artist will be on it, but it was good. What else do I have? Supergirl number 30. So this is the big showdown between Supergirl and Lord Gandello, who is the one that kind of orchestrated the whole eradication of Krypton. And Gandello wants to, you know, finish the job and get rid of, you know, any remaining Kryptonians, but Kara's pretty PO'd and, you know, kind of like just wipes the floor with Gandello. Yeah, like there's this one cool page where she just hauls off and like punches Gandello like right in the face, and looks like she like, you know, smashes like this giant hole like right in where her nose should be at. But she can morph herself around, yeah. So it's another one of those moments where it's like, you know, the superpowered being can just go all out because the person they're fighting against can take it.
Let loose a little bit.
Yeah. So she, you know, managed to take care of her fairly easily, especially once she starts using Rogozar's axe and then realizes that the axe is kind of also taunting her to, you know, let go of her, you know, to give in to her urges and actually just, like, kill, you know, Gandello. So, but she eventually, like, realizes that and stops, you know, herself from crossing the line. But then something happens that kind of, like, propels her, you know, across the galaxy almost and lands her at the feet of Superman and John, and it looks like that's how she ends up, you know, with them, leading into today's Superman issue that has all of them on the cover. So we'll see how that wraps up. But this has been a good book ever since I liked it from the beginning, but since it came back, it relaunched like issue 23, I think it's been a really, really good book with her being separate from the rest of the DC universe. We'll see how it is now that she's kind of being brought back into the fold a bit, but I've really enjoyed this, you know, Supergirl in space kind of story. And the last one I will mention is Deadly Class 38. So this is an interesting issue because this sees Marcus and Maria come back to King's Dominion. So the school that, you know, tried to kill them, they end up, you know, coming back to and saying that they wanted to, you know, stop running and face things head on. And they go see Master Lin and essentially get, you know, their place back as students. And since they survived the big, like, freshman calling, Marcus is now elevated to legacy status. And Maria is now the head of the crime syndicate that her, you know, adoptive father was the head of. And they're trying to play it off as if they, you know, want to finish their, you know, education in, you know, these deadly arts, but it's very obvious they have some sort of
plot or plan going on in the background as well. It seemed very abrupt to have them suddenly go back to the school. That I wasn't expecting that, but I'm interested to see where it goes.
You said this is supposed to be ending soon, right? You said?
I'm not sure if Deadly Class is ending soon or not. A lot of his other books are, but
okay.
I shouldn't say a lot. Black Science is ending soon.
I was just wondering because like I haven't caught up on the trades, but like I've seen stuff where they're still like the freshmen, like you know what I mean. How much into the school? Like how many? You know, would they? You know how they were going to go into it? You know how much? How many years they were going to actually do, or and stuff like that.
I want to say at this point, if they were freshmen when it started, this point
they're at least second year.
They would be like second year, yeah, because the freshman calling was the end of the freshman year, but then they were on the run for a while. So I think it would be like their second year right now. That's it.
You done?
Mm-hmm. So it's coming out next week, Colin.
Stuff. Now it is a lighter week.
It's a lighter week.
It's a lighter week.
What's that mean?
Week.
Slip of the tongue, Freudian slip.
But, sorry, I have Action Comics, as Guardians of the Galaxy is a War of Realms tie-in. Avengers, I believe, is also a War of Realms tie-in. They just didn't denote it that. New Clue series, Clue Candlestick, is coming. Detective Comics, 1004. Dial H for Hero, number 3. Drawing Blood Spilled Ink. This is a new one from Kevin Eastman, kind of getting away from Turtles and doing one about a cartoonist. Faithless number 2, that's the one from Boom by Azzarello, and I forget who's drawn it. Flash 71, continuing on Flash Year 1. Freedom Fighters number 6. Goon number 2, that one sold really, really well. People like that. Incursion number 4, wrapping up that miniseries. Mary Shelley Monster Hunter number 2. Number 1 of that was quite good. That was from Aftershock. Middle West is coming out with her first trade paperback, $9.99. That one has done really, really well in issues. I love the timing on this. I'm finally getting the Pop Marvel, Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel pop. That's good timing.
Well, it is in time for it to come out on DVD.
Right. That's great. I wouldn't have wanted it when the movie was out. Or by Free Comic Book Day. We also have Radically Ronin Ragdolls, one shot. This is another one, Kevin Eastman doing kind of a little riff on all the spin-offs from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Road of Bones, this is one from IDW, and it was it's a story about a guy escaping from a Russian gulag. Secret Life of Pets from the movie, because I know Dave's excited about that one.
My tickets already.
Okay. Star Wars Age of Rebellion Jabba the Hutt, because Jabba is everybody's favorite character. Star Wars Galaxy's Edge number 2.
You said Jar Jar, right?
No, Jabba.
No, Jar Jar.
Jabba the Hutt. We're past Jar Jar.
What about Pizza the Hutt?
He was a prequel. We have The Savage Shores. I have 1 through 4 all coming in next week. It's only 5-issue series. Vamplade Season 4 number 1. I know everybody's excited about that one. Venom is a War of Realms tie-in, and then we're getting a War of Realms, I believe it might just be a one-shot, War of Realms Strike Force Land of Giants. The Land of Giants is where they are holding Thor, so they have to go try to save him. So that's what is coming next week. A fun thing going on for me this weekend is if you come by Saturday, I won't be here, because I'll be on an airplane heading to Vegas, baby.
Ooh. Are you going to the Comic Sub Lounge?
I will be going to the Comic Hub, Lounge. But it's the Diamond Retailer Summit is this weekend in Vegas. So I decided, A, being part of the board, and B, just kind of wanting to get away.
You going to see any shows?
No, there's not enough time. Basically, I get there.
Vegas is a city that never sleeps, probably. There's always enough time.
But Colin needs to sleep.
Buddy Ranch? He's dead.
He is, but they ain't. Just remember, in Clark County, it's illegal. Outside of Clark County, you can do that shit.
Okay, I'll remember that.
Bring your credit card.
A hooker a credit card, you deserve to get robbed.
The funny thing is,
Paul's gonna bring a checkbook.
That's how Jerry Springer stopped being the mayor of Cincinnati. He got caught writing a check to a hooker.
Write a check, yeah.
I was bummed. I'm like, oh man, the Game of Thrones, I'm going to have to stay off social media and everything. And then it dawned on me, I've been watching it on my phone the last 3 episodes. So,
if you're in a hotel, you probably have HBO.
They probably do. So we'll see. Everything ends at 9:30. I'm like, well, but that's only
It'll be 6:30 then.
Well, no, 9:30 out there. No, okay. So, but I'm like, oh, but, you know, then you can do stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but that's still 11:30 my time. But then
the boom bus.
No, I don't. That was at Comics Pro. I don't think they do the boom bus there. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see what's going on.
What about the other bus?
What other bus?
The other bus.
But, so we'll see what's going on. I'm hoping there's a store tour for the local stores out there, and there's two I definitely want to see. Just two friends of mine, their stores. My only problem is my plane lands at 1:05 and the bus leaves at 2, so that could be a little tight.
That's tight in Vegas because it can take 45 minutes to get your bags.
Yeah. So, well, no, I'll be carrying on, so not worried about that. So we'll see how that goes. I'm hopeful. So that should be fun. So I should come home with lots of stories.
And then you can tell next on week, the podcast. Yeah.
But you can't. What happens in Vegas? Yeah, stays
we'll
in Vegas.
We'll talk about the official stuff. So that's about it. We're doing Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles. I'm gonna take that with me and read that on the plane. And then we're doing Star Wars double points on all Star Wars all month. As always, you can find me, well, not always in the store, but website's PittsburghComics.com, Facebook is Pittsburgh Comics, Twitter and Instagram are PGH Comics. So if you have any questions, go ahead and get a hold of me there. I will be back. The only day I'm missing is Saturday. So that's it. Dave!
That's a podcast.
We will talk at you next week. See ya.